Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thank you so much for all of your contact over the course of the morning. Let's see, a lot of people saying, referencing any allocations for housing refugees. Just to run through that to get it out of the way. Contingency funding. The Department of Justice, Home Affairs and Migration has allocated $1.6 billion in contingency. This funding is earmarked for several projects related to international protection and also accommodation for recipients of temporary protection from Ukraine. So the accommodation recognition payment, that's the ARP. It's a monthly tax-free payment to hosts providing accommodation to Ukrainian refugees, has been extended to March 31st, 2026. This extension aligns with the EU temporary directive, and that payment is €600 per month per property, and that came in as of June 2025. So the housing budget in total is $11.3 billion, and you can work out yourself if that's too big or too little a percentage of that. Greg, we have a serious problem with illegal taxis operating in our area. I've reported this to Gardaí and the tax regulator. What frightens me more was this morning, I noticed a person who's under investigation drop a child off to school. What's going to be done about this before someone is hurt? What if one of these cars had a collision? Where would the unknowing passengers be? Back to the budget now. I just wanted to highlight that the recent budget hasn't removed the means testing for disability carers allowance. It feels very unfair to hundreds of parents who had to give up their jobs to care for their loved ones. Even qualified professionals with a decade or more of experience, similar to myself, are unable to work in these circumstances. Carers allowance is means tested, which includes or excludes many who desperately need support. According to the latest figures, over 115,000 family carers in Ireland provide full-time care, yet many remain excluded due to these restrictions. Good morning, Greg. Just listening to all the talk about the budget. I'm on disability allowance. The husband is on illness benefit. We're not entitled to the fuel allowance, but of course you get an extra €10 from in 2026. Double check your criteria. They did talk of increasing eligibility for the fuel allowance. So double check. I'm not saying that it's changed to benefit you, but always double check. If you're getting working family payment, do you automatically get the fuel allowance now? And if so, when does it start? I think scheduled March 26th. Sure, it's not coming into July. Hospitality, 26 indeed. Those in hospitality have said they'd loved it from January, but they'll take July. Good morning, Greg. Isn't it wonderful to realise that the same old turkeys keep voting for Christmas and the establishment parties? It's way past time people woke up to the realisation of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, socialism for the elite and capitalism for the workers. It is not an untypical budget when you've just been elected. You know, obviously there's a number of budgets, but the electorate, whether it's this government or any government or an individual, you know, the people out there have very short memories. And I've seen that sitting in this chair whereby, you know, a person was, you know, the worst thing ever. And in the space of a couple of months, the best thing ever, you know. So, I mean, if people's memories are so short, obviously that's going to be exploited. What does the Christmas bonus mean? Who gets it and how much is it? It's a double social welfare payment, as far as I'm aware. And people on those call social welfare payments. What exactly is the Rainy Day Fund for? When the banks collapse, we are in the middle of a housing and energy crisis. We need this money. I presume what it's for is that if there is a slowdown in the economy, that we can continue to spend on infrastructure. So what happened in the past was, as soon as an economy slowed down, this is what people say, you know, capital spending was cut. So there was no roads being built, no water being put in, no electricity infrastructure updates. I presume the Rainy Day Fund is not to bail out the banks, who are actually in decent shape. I'm open to correction. It is to allow spending to continue for when you come out of any dip. Greg, as a widow, there was nothing in this budget for me this morning, yet Fianna Fáil have spent thousands on an office and a campaign for a candidate that's no longer in the race. How can we trust this government? Well, that's up to you. Horse racing, etc., getting $99 billion. What's it spent on? All coming into this country. Not one party mentioned this. Huge expense draining our country. We're our working class paying for it all. My understanding was, I checked into this a couple of years ago, and a lot of it was going on prize money. I'm not sure if that's changed. I can dig around in relation to that. But obviously they're seen as really important industries because the spend on horse racing and dog racing is, bar the shout, and 10 times that spent on domestic abuse and gender violence, gender-based violence. What is in the budget for people doing a master's in college? Not an undergraduate. I know fees were reduced to $2,500, but have master's fees been reduced? I don't know. I could find no reference to that. It's the only thing I could say. And some of the very specific stuff that affects us very specifically, that detail has yet, in some cases, to come out. But if anyone has found that info, please pass it on and I'll pass it on. Donegal is some of the best horse jockeys in Ireland, so let's stay positive on the budget allocation to horses. Okay, yay! 99 million for the great Donegal jockeys.
Yeah!
Woo! I was waiting for it. I know which way. I'll leave it at that. Please give a breakdown on carer's allowance. I couldn't make sense of it. Are we being topped up? I know the threshold has gone up, but what does it mean for the actual payment? The payment increases by €10 per week. To answer that question, and there are going to be those, hopefully, who are caring, who are earning, you know, maybe just under 1,000 as an individual or just under 2,000 as a couple, who will get the carer's allowance and also obviously that increase. For the €10 rise in social welfare payments, is that per payment, or if you got three payments, for example, do you get one extra tenner? I don't know. I suspect it would be for the greatest payment that you have, and then, you know, a core payment. I'm not sure what kind of payments you're talking about, so can't answer that necessarily specifically. A caller says, the budget no good for the working man or woman. Seen examples last night. People can be worse off in a country where people are struggling already. Listen, you heard from Crona there. Some of this is by design and not accident either. Maybe to cool things down, you know, to calm the bat really, which could end up reducing house prices, etc. It could be all part of a great plan. And when I say great, I'm not calling it great. I mean, in terms of large. A caller says, no real supports for the working person again. We're just keeping the rest of the country. But, of course, big rewards for the business community. And just part of me feels that, you know, and I said this on the show previously, that developers had the government by the ghoulies because they, you know, 40 or 50,000 planning permissions had been awarded and they can just sit on them. You know, they can just sit on them and say, look at, you know, you're going to have to make, we're going to have to make a bit more money before we do that. And now the government's reduced the VAT rate down to 9%, and all of a sudden we're expecting this flood of apartments to be provided, mostly in Dublin, I would imagine. But, I mean, it does feel like maybe that industry could have been holding the government ransom in delivering those apartments, because it's not going to reduce the cost of an apartment. It's just going to mean builders, developers, whatever the right phraseology, actually progress if they choose to. But now they make more money, so they might. Do you get where I'm coming from? Did the people living alone get anything? Two-tier budget, one for the Irish and one on asylum seekers who got a huge spend. Greg, I was watching Primetime last night about the budget. As always, they had a group of people in the studio and they were assessing how the budget would affect each of them. What came to my mind was here we have two RTE presenters who are probably on at least €300,000 a year talking to people about struggling to pay for electricity or buy their own house or send their child to college. There is, and I'm just, I wonder if I were in that position, do you, if you don't face the daily, day-to-day struggles, do you lose the ability actually to ask questions as if you do or to empathise the way one might? I don't know the presenters you're talking about. They're probably wonderful people. But, you know, if you're a millionaire talking to other millionaires about poor people, you know, and I'm using poor people to as Middle Ireland effectively, you know, I don't know. Budget again. Carer's allowance. For a full-time carer, they're worse off than last year. They got electric credits last year at €250. Who's earning 1,000 a week working 18 hours a week? The government has framed this to make themselves look good, but it's not good for carers. Is it possible maybe a carer could work more? I know they're caring. I don't know. I'm not in that position, so I can't say. But of course, that's the problem with one-off bonuses, right? That you're always going to compare how you were surviving last year with them compared to this year without them. So then when you talk about tenners and fivers and €8, does that mean now too that people in council accommodation now are reassessed for their ability to pay and will see their rent increase most likely? Is that always what happens? I've spoken to people that find that, you know, so they get a pay increase and then they're assessed again financially by the local authority, wherever they might be. And the local authority, right, you've got the ability to pay a little bit extra. And I've seen in the past where half or all of any increases in social welfare effectively end up going back to the state via rent. Any insight into that? Let me know. 086 60 25,000. 086 60 25,000. Right, so you might remember that we were chatting to Nisa Dolan, who was as part of that flotilla. I do have some audio of that here. No, I don't. There's a couple of videos there. We're going to have to come up with a system that makes it a little bit clearer. But anyway, I can sort that out off air. But yes, Nisa Dolan, her boat that she was on. Remember I said, because I wasn't aware that the flotilla was so strung out, right? So she was a couple of hundred miles away, nautical or other, from the waters where the other boats were intercepted. Well, they reached those waters overnight, and they're trying to deliver humanitarian aid to famine-stricken Gaza. And they have now been, their vessel has now been seized. And whilst some of those who were Irish are already home and have been deported, others now are going into the custody of Israelis. Okay, so let's see here. We got this video in. I can have a listen to this. This is, or we can have a listen to this. This is the people on the boat, including Nisa. They're part of the Irish delegation aboard this particular boat. Let's hear what happened.
We are two Irish citizens. If you see this video, we have been attacked by the Israeli occupation forces. We appeal to our friends, our family, and our comrades to put pressure on the Irish government to demand our release from Israel as soon as possible.
All right, so there you have it. That was Nisa speaking there, who we spoke to earlier in the week. Okay, we'll be back with more on the programme after we take a break. Good luck, by the way, if you're playing the bingo today. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. Thanks so much for keeping us so busy on the phone lines today. It's great to have your interactions. It's critical, actually. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000. Or give us a call on 07491 25,000. The budget, I wasn't sure of the level of public engagement in it, but it's been absolutely huge. And we're hundreds of comments behind, which we hope to get to over the course of the show. In fact, we'll endeavour to do so. So we also are highlighting where there is good news. Yesterday's budget commitment to the Derry-Dublin Airlink has been welcomed. The budget contains $1 billion in funding for the Shared Ireland Initiative, which includes the PSA flight linking the two cities. Derry City and Strabane District Council say that the move represents a strategic opportunity to strengthen links and improve access for business and tourism. Let's get some reaction from Sinn Féin Chief Whip and spokesperson on fisheries and the Marine, Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. As I say, you know, we can talk about the budget in general, but when there are little bits of good news, especially for the region, not just for Derry and Strabane, that has to be welcome too.
Yeah, no, it's very welcome news, Greg, and there's a great deal of congratulations to be given to the City Derry Airport Board themselves, who have worked on this for 15 years to get it reinstated again. Letter Kenny and Derry Chambers of Commerce, as both of them had worked together and championed this for a long, long time. It was a terrible decision back in the day, particularly when you look at the map of Ireland, Greg. You know, there's no direct rail connection from Donegal and Derry to Dublin. There's no motorway. A5 continues to break our heart. So, you know, this should have been done a long time ago, but it's really, really welcome that it's back. And it's not just about connecting. Of course, 40% of the passengers that use City Derry Airport are from North Donegal. So there's a big, big Donegal, Derry, Tyrone community using it. But it's not just about connecting us to Dublin. It's connecting on to the rest of the world. So you have people flying in from all parts of the world into Dublin, really, really busy airport, that can now link directly onto us, get a connecting flight. So it's so, so important, and the quicker the better.
Yeah, and so that means, you know, your departure to wherever and is, you know, bookable. You leave from Derry going to wherever you might be going via Dublin and interchanging flights. It's maybe not something we're terribly used to, but it's quite common, of course, and vice versa, that people can plan to come directly into the region. They won't care about, you know, walking up a corridor and hopping on a second plane to get very conveniently into the northwest of Ireland.
Yeah, and you know, it comes on the back of really good news in recent years, where for a long, long time, City Derry Airport was funded by the ratepayers in Derry. And, you know, that's a council that, you know, that would be behind the rest of the councils in the north. So it was a real burden, really tough, and it limited what you could do. So the executive has taken responsibility now for funding the airports. So that's really good news. As you know, they've got links on to London Heathrow, which, you know, of course, is one of the busiest airports in the world. So, you know, you've got so many links to Scotland and England and sort of tourism destinations. But to have that now Dublin connection is it's really important. I've seen an independent economic assessment that the airport board had submitted to the government a number of years back, and then it estimates the value to our region is about 57 million per annum. That's conservative. So listen, this should have happened a long time ago. It's my only, like so many things in Donegal and Derry, we have to fight for them. We have to work together, stand together. We shouldn't have to do it, but listen, when we have a victory, we'll take it, you know.
All right, okay. I just want to move to fishing, if that's all right, because we know the International Council for Exploration of the Sea, it's their scientific advice which governs stock status, which is used by the EU. And it's recommending a 70% reduction in the EU's mackerel quota next year, a 41% reduction in blue whiting quota, and a 22% reduction in boar fish quota. This is seen by many as an Armageddon for the Irish fishing industry. Is that how you would frame it? And how, if at all, can we resist what might be coming down the tracks, which could be completely devastating for what's left of our fishing industry?
Yeah, Greg, it really is extremely serious. Just for your listeners' benefit, one of the big markets that we built up over the years was mackerel, and particularly the Killybegs based operation there, which, you know, they built it from nothing. You know, it's mackerel is part of the pelagic family of fish species. Now, mackerel spawns off the coast of Ireland and then it works its way up the Atlantic. And the problem is that the North Atlantic countries of Norway, Iceland and the Faroes have recklessly overfished. This has been going on for years. But it's not just them. It's European member corporations that are based in the European Union have invested their money in building up those fleets. And it's European Union corporations that have been recklessly doing this. It's been allowed to happen. It's been going on for years, but the news is basically they've destroyed the mackerel fishery, which is so important to Donegal, but not just Donegal, right down the west coast of Ireland.
But does it not make a whole mockery of the whole system that we effectively are now going to pay the price for a lack of policing or for playing loose with the Faroes, Russia, Norway? You know, and if you can trust the data, you know, and it's our industry that is going to pay the price. But like the EU can't sort of relinquish responsibility in relation to this, you know, in fact, because were they governing like they should govern? Were they fair like they should have been fared? Did they control like they should have controlled? I don't understand why we always seem to have to pick up the bill for what is dictated to us.
This is a big moment for our government, because this is a moment for a reset, a radical reset of the way that we do business in Europe. I mean, what's happened here is that there are corporations in the European Union who get access to cod in Norwegian fisheries, and in return, Norway, Iceland get access to our waters to get a bigger share of blue whiting, which is another species, by the way. Mackerel has been the focus. Blue whiting is down 41%. I mean, it's a disaster. So they've been overfishing across the board and getting rewarded for it, financially rewarded. There are corporations in the European Union which clearly influence the European Commission to do nothing. So what you've had is, see, your show deals with this all the time, Greg. Law, Laws only make sense if they apply equally to everybody. If somebody can get away with breaking the law, but not only get away with it, get rewarded for it, the whole thing makes no sense. So right now, the Common Fisheries Policy, well, not right now, it has been for years a disaster for Ireland, but this is a moment, and just for listeners, I know you hear the word crisis and you're probably, it goes over your head. This is a deeply serious crisis for our fishing
But
industry.
how do we get around it, right? Because we can't necessarily argue the data, or maybe we can. But listen, what we rely on, mackerel and others, you know, are heavily depleted. I mean, what is the scope to diversify into other stocks there? Do you know what I mean? Is the capacity there? Can we actually resist it? Even if we had, you know, a government that says we are not taking this, the data shows the stocks are dwindling. So what is the potential off-ramp here?
Well, in the short term, the Minister, Timmy Dooley, is going to have some serious straight talking, which hasn't happened for a very long time. An Irish minister speaking directly. He's going to have to say, these are our waters, right? Out to the 200-mile limit, these are Irish waters. I know they're under the jurisdiction of the Common Fisheries Policy, but you've been screwing us for years, right? Foreign vessels have come in, have got a massive share of the fish in our waters. We have played by the rules. We have been the people who've done the right thing by the science, and we are being screwed. Basically, after Brexit, this is worse than Brexit. Remember the hit we took from Brexit, where we were so unfairly treated? This is actually worse than that. So you have to demand now an emergency solution in terms of access to fish in our own waters that allows our industry to survive. But there also will need to be financial supports, not just for the businesses, because I know some of the fishermen and ancillary workers have been annoyed about this. I want to be clear, there needs to be a financial assistance to workers, to businesses, and to the boat owners. It needs to be across that board. So this is a moment of real urgency, and
Yes,
we
but I
need to see it
mean,
from government.
but what does that not really mean? And I don't think this is what fishermen want. That really means they're being paid to have their boats tied up. What does that actually mean for the long-term future of the industry? Great, it keeps jobs. Great, it keeps the licenses on the boats or whatever it might be. But I mean, if the rebel countries, the Faroes, Norway, Iceland, etc., continue to do what they want to do, you know, the stocks don't recover. How long do these payments or these supports, which we haven't secured, stay in place? Do you know what I mean? Like that, an industry whereby you're paying people not to fish, it's not really an industry, is it?
And you see, that's what I've always heard from fishermen, and it really is painful. You know, they've always resisted. You know, like in the farming community, they did get substantial financial supports, and they needed it. Fishermen have always resisted it because they suspected that they were being denied access to fishery, and that is the reality. But we're at a point now, right? It's got so serious, Greg, at this point, we either let our industry die, or we stand up and we fight back. And to me, the first conversation is that how on earth were Iceland and Norway able to fish in Irish waters at a time when they were recklessly overfishing mackerel? So they got access to, they got more blue whiting in Irish waters, Norway and Iceland, than the Irish fishing fleet at a time when they were recklessly overfishing. This has gone on for years. So that has to stop today. Has to stop today. You do not get access to fish in European waters while you recklessly overfish in your own
But is it
waters, you
not the
know?
case, if the truth be told, as important as it is to us, that in the wider scale of the European economy, fishing is insignificant and it's a bargaining chip? And if you can gain something in a different space from Russia or Faroe or Iceland or Norway or whatever, well, then this is a price that we're prepared to pay. Because really, if you try and get a figure as fishing as a percentage of the, what would you call it, the GDP of Europe, it's minuscule, really. Is that the problem here? That really why we it's so important to us, but we are small fish, pun intended. And the EU, really, the benefit of chip bargaining it out is far greater than the value of fishing itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly a truth, Greg, that our fishing communities were sacrificed when we went into the European Union, and for a period of time it looked like farmers were benefiting, but now it's clear that they're not anymore. So, like, there has been a profound injustice, but we also need to have a plan to confront the hypocrites. And I mean, the level of hypocrisy in the European Commission, who preach to small fishermen all around our coast about, you know, responsible fishing, follow the science, which, by the way, I agree with. You should follow the science. You should sustain the fishery. While you have super trawlers And while you have vested interests in huge corporations and reckless players, and nothing's done, like nothing's done. We talk about the impact of the international rules on the disaster in Gaza and how the international community has no credibility. The European Commission has no credibility when they talk about climate change and they talk about sustainable fisheries, because they have allowed these big interests to get away with it. So that's why we're at this crisis. But Greg, I don't know what we do. We either put up our hands and let our industry die, or we demand of our
Yeah, but
government that they
some would
stand up
say
and plead.
the block works for that have already been. And my point that I was trying to make, whether it's accurate or not, is that, it's very hard to get anything when the rest of Europe might think it's just a bargaining chip of no significance. Just one thing, what is a possibility, if the quotas are to be reduced greatly, is it a possibility that if we get we actually manage to secure a greater percentage of what is left, that we could maintain where we're at the moment? Do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no, you're right. That has to be part of the conversation. There's a thing called the Hague preferences, which in the past would have softened the blow when there was a cut to quota like mackerel for Ireland. But this time it's so bad, the cuts, that even this Hague preference won't resolve the issue. Yes, you're right. We need to have more fish. That's the first point on it.
And
Because
fish that
fishermen.
actually suit our fleet as well.
Yeah, exactly. The first thing we have to demand is as much fish as possible from our own waters to save our industry. That's the first point. That's the first point, crucial, right? And that conversation's never been properly had. It has to happen now in this crisis. And then the second conversation, when that's been had and you secured as much fish as possible, is what are the financial supports that we need to put in place? The fishery, see the fishery, the mackerel fishery, Greg. The fishery can recover if everybody acts responsibly, right? But there has to be a much reduced access now to the countries who are irresponsible and reckless. And that includes the United Kingdom, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
Really
I don't
reckless
think it's
their
going to happen.
behavior.
I mean, when you see effectively ourselves overinterpreting regulation and making it very, very difficult, almost impossible. I couldn't estimate catches like they're asking us to do, people facing criminal charges in court in this space, and then being squeezed completely out of it by floating factories that you can, it's gaslighting. With a decent pair of binoculars, you can almost see them from Iron Moor. I hear a lot of words, not just from the likes of yourself, you have to do what you have to do, but even from Minister Dooley. But it feels to me this is a bit of a fait accompli. The writing's on the wall, and I think we're going to be having solar farms and offshore wind turbines rather than a viable fishing and farming industry going forward. And that's, I hope I'm not right, but unfortunately, that's which way the wind seems to be blowing. Unless we change tact.
Greg, and listen, I've been spokesperson on fisheries now for us for about 5 years, and I speak to fishermen every day of my life. I travel up and down the coast, harbours and piers, and it's hard to argue with you. Like, I'll be honest with you, I met with Islands fishermen there over the weekend, from Aran Mór and from Aran Islands off Galway. And I'm going to be honest, I've never been more despondent in a long, long time. And I get out of bed every morning. You hope you can. It's a very tough time. And it's the years of failure, the years of neglect, the years of European Commission hypocrisy and double talk. And here we are now. But
I mean,
we
people
have
go.
to,
There's
we have
people
to hope.
going out in a 20-foot punt, right, dragging up pots with their bare hands, and drones flying over the top of them to make sure everything's, that the licenses are in place or whatever, or landing down on a pier and asking them to get through. And you can see, quite literally, floating factories off the coast. We don't have a navy to talk of anymore because all the boats are tied up, that are allowed to do whatever they want. And you've got three fellas in luminous jackets standing on a pier with their arms crossed, checking that someone's life jacket is in date. I don't mind that. That has to be done. But it's actually really quite, it's quite actually embarrassing when you look at the whole sector as a whole.
It's absolutely. Remember Muireann Kavanagh, that fantastic
Of
young
course.
woman on Aran Mór? She wasn't allowed to fish on a hook and line to catch pollock, and yet you have huge super trawlers who catch them and bycatch. Like, it is an absolute joke. I mean, I find, like, listen, you've got to try and work out how we save the industry, but it's just heartbreaking what we've done to our fishing communities. It's heartbreaking.
Okay, listen, I know we invited you on to talk about the, but I didn't get a chance to talk about Minister Dooley's recent visit and the whole crisis over there, and we do talk about it, so I appreciate the opportunity, especially given your senior position in this regard, to have that chat. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate it.
All right, that's Deputy Padraig McLaughlin. All right, welcome back to the programme. Now, let's get that weather forecast. In fact, you know, I can tell you it's going to be a relatively nice day. Temperatures in the mid-teens. I'll give you a prop one before we go, because I don't want to eat into any further time, because I have Danielle Boner, Donegal Project Coordinator at the Women's Collective Ireland in Donegal, who's a regular enough visitor to these shores. Good morning to you.
I seem like a regular now. I was only here in the end of July before I went off for the summer, talking about our research, obviously.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so I'm lovely. I'm delighted to be back. Obviously, Caroline, I was chatting with Caroline, asked could we come on today to talk about what we're going to talk about.
Martina Gillespie is going to help us with this conversation. She's prosthesis fitter at McElhenney's Ballybuffet. Yeah, thanks, Martina.
Thank you.
Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, that's
the correct.
Title. Thank you.
Okay. Right, so we're going to talk about a free event coming up at the end of October. But, you know, We're sort of in and around that. I like to talk about these things all year round, okay? But you do get certain months and weeks talking about breast cancer. And it's always important to talk about it, isn't it, Danielle?
Yeah, because obviously the last time I was here in a private conversation, I'd said I was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2023. Two and a half years ago now. So obviously it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month now. And obviously people heighten up awareness, and obviously people talk who've had breast cancer talk about it all year round. But for me, one of the things that I wanted to maybe obviously I have a connection with you guys to highlight was the service, if you have had breast cancer, that are there. And one of the services is with McElhenney's in terms of bras, because bras are really important, obviously, for the supports after your surgery. And I never found out about it until 6 months post-surgery.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was a real shock, because I'm not going to name the shop, but a certain shop, I just sort of went in there and sort of found, because I wasn't really given any guidance on what I should be doing to support myself there. And I just sort of went into that particular shop and got the most comfortable non-wire bra. And I thought gave you firm fitting. And I thought, oh, that would be grand. And then because I had lymph nodes taken out, mm-hmm. so I was at risk of lymphedema, and I asked to be referred to a lymphedema specialist, and that was January of last year. And I went in there, and she gave me a couple of things. She goes, oh, have you got a bra, Danielle? And I was like, oh yeah, I've got one from blah blah. She's like, no, you need a supportive bra, because I think I might have some, but I might not have any that fit you. And I was like, oh, it's okay. And she goes, no, she goes, talk to McElhenney's. And I was like, what? And she goes, yeah, they have a service there that, you know, they have fitters and they have specific bras for women that have had breast cancer. And I was like, okay. And she goes, oh, just, you know, phone them up and speak to them. And I didn't, because I went online and I saw some information. I sort of was telling Martina and Fiona outside, because they just kept using the word online on the HSC website around, like, mastectomy. And I didn't have a mastectomy, I had a lumpectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I thought, no, I thought, I don't want to take away. I haven't had that, and I don't want to take away. If there's a pot of money, this sounds really stupid, a pot of money that's there for that, I'll leave women who have had a boob breast removed. And then I came back, I was called back in like 6 months later just to have the follow-up, see how I was getting on. And the lady said to me, oh, did you get your bra, Danielle? And I was like, no. And she was like, and in like a little lecture, but in a nice way, she's like, Danielle, you could have had half your boob removed, and who's anyone to tell? That's seen as a lumpectomy, but you need support there.
Yeah.
And the way she said it, and we sort of laughed about it, and I was like, she goes, no, you are entitled to it.
Okay.
And at the time, I had a medical card, and you were entitled to it when you had the medical card. Martina explained things have changed, and anyone can.
And it's the swimsuits as well. Yeah. There, so I will talk about that.
And then literally the next day, I went to my doctor, and I got, they gave me a prescription, and I had called McElhenney's. And I went in there, and it was really lovely. And like, cause I was thinking, because that's what there's specifically ladies that are trained in the fitting, but also then that as well. And I was there for like an hour and a half, and we were laughing, and it was just nice. And I walked away with two bras, two lovely bras, expensive bras as well, which I would never afford to have paid. And they were supportive. And then she said to me, she's like, now don't forget to put that in your diary for next year, Danielle. And then, so the next year, I then met Martina this year in July. And I've obviously the work that I do working with women, and actually the reason why I got diagnosed is because I knew there had been a lump there, but I had lost quite a bit of weight during that time, yeah. And I thought it was lumps and bumps. And the reason why I went through, I know, and this is what one of the things I will say is I think that from a young age, when young girls were developing breasts, please just check yourself, even once a month. Because when I say this, as a baseline,
you need to recognize the baseline.
You
before
know
you can
what
recognize
you
a
feel like, and if anything changes, we should say this. Sometimes there can be things, and it is absolutely nothing, because you can have when you're during your period or upset, your breast changes and stuff. This happened to my sister, but a woman that works in the community sector. She might be listening today, so she'll know who I'm talking about. She sent us a message in the office, I'm just going off, girls, because I've had been diagnosed with breast cancer, I'm going in for surgery. And I was like this in the office going, I've had a lump there, I think I should go to the doctor. And I went to the doctor, and actually it was a week after I had come here.
Okay.
And it was really weird, it was a weird time. I wasn't expecting, I have family history of breast cancer, but people are like, oh, you're too young, Danielle.
Yeah, but you see, the funny thing is that even me in this show doing so many of these awareness pieces, you know what you should do or what you're probably the right
but
thing
it's
to
doing
do.
Doing it in practice.
It is. I'll come back to you. Martina,
yes.
In terms of the bras that we're talking about now,
yes.
How much of it is support post-operation? How much of it can be sort of about how a woman feels about themselves? Or, is there a mix there of the benefits?
Well, first of all, it's really important to get the right fit.
Yeah.
So if you've the right fit, you want to be confident. And also, if you're wearing a prosthesis, I need to make sure that when you go out, that you feel exactly the same and confident in that bra that you've got on.
And everyone will know what we're talking about. Say you had one breast removed.
One breast
so
removed.
So you retain one breast, and a prosthesis is a substitute,
yes.
External substitute,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
And that's sized depending on the breast size. So that's really, really important, a very important part of the job. And then also your swimwear, that your swimwear is done exactly the same way and the fit of that. Also, the prosthesis bras is slightly different. You have a side panel, you have a different structure, wider straps. You're trying to make that bra really supportive, really firm and really tight, so that it's flush against the skin. So that's a really important part of the job.
And that's why it's important to get properly fitted and go to experts.
Yes. I mean, we cover all of Ireland, excluding Northern Ireland. So all you need is a form from us, and you get that form and you take it to the doctor, and they sign and stamp it, and you come back to us, and we will do all that entails to get you fitted. So you will leave with two bras every year, a swimsuit every year, and every second year a prosthesis. And if you've had double mastectomy, it's two prostheses. Mm. So that's very important. We want people to leave confident, happy. So we want you to go on a journey when you come in to when you leave.
But you're on that journey with them.
100%.
Yeah, that's the important
thing. It's private, it's confidential.
It's expert too, right? Because
in that
situation, especially if you're feeling vulnerable, you sometimes need to be able to trust somebody, don't you?
100%.
Yeah.
And you've got to have empathy. No matter in what other jobs you do, empathy is really important.
Yeah. And so in terms of the bra fitting, what is the actual process? So a person might come to you initially,
yes.
Get the forms from you, which I think is actually really valuable as well. Go to the GP, and then the fitting process begins and have you, or what?
So they would make an appointment. Because Fiona and me would be doing the fitting. They'd make an appointment so we can give them the time. You don't want to be rushed. So they'd make an appointment. We would then come into us at whatever time they wanted to come in, and then we would do that fitting.
You will have people that come in different ways. There are people that come in and go, right, this is great, I want to get it over and done with.
Yes.
Others that are still maybe coming to terms with dramatic changes to their bodies,
100%.
And maybe it's only they that have sort of seen them. And that's, I think, again, where your understanding, empathy and experience comes in, because you will be able to sort of gauge that so that the experience is as perfect as can possibly be for whichever woman happens to come in.
Exactly. And confidentiality, that's so important, because, people, we don't know what's gone on beforehand or how they're feeling or who they want to let know. So it's really important that we just go on the journey with them, make sure they're happy, so that they come back next year and they're happy to get their bras and their swimsuits and the prosthesis again next year.
All right. Now, sometimes if you get, I remember when I was a kid, right, got prescription glasses and they were pretty basic. Okay. You know, no harm or no shame, right? But often when you sort of get a bit of state assistance with something, it can be a bit basic, right?
Yes, 100%.
So what's this selection like that you have available?
Yeah. So we work with a company called Anita. Now, you can imagine these are structured. They've been going up for years. The experience, the detail that goes into these bras, like I said, a wide strap support, side seam, very, very important for any swelling. Also, the fits. So they're slightly, might come slightly higher, so they've got really good support. Mm-hmm. They feel secure in that bra.
So they're maybe coming in on the upper chest sort of a feeling.
Yeah, on the upper chest. Yeah, yeah. So that if you lean forward.
Yes, you've
got to think of everything when, you, when you're doing prostheses. So it's... that's where the experience comes in. And so we work with them and we work with True Life. They do the prosthesis. Fantastic. I've been to the factory. It's in Dublin and it's incredible. The work that goes into these, they're like
I presume
molds.
They're coming all, they can be adjusted so they match the shape of the breast.
Yeah, so they'll come in sizing.
Okay.
So just say a 32D and then you've got... an E, an F. So you're going up in the cup. So you're going up in the, say, they come in 1, 2, and 3. So that's to fit each different type of breast on the the other side.
And Danielle, again, everybody's different, but for some people, cancer treatment could be the loss of the hair or the loss of a breast or how that might impact them. There is, and we see great service that are provided in terms of you know, counselling and other types of support. But if even in a difficult situation, for most people, I think if you feel good, if you feel good, it helps with your recovery, it helps with your mental state, it helps with your interaction with the world.
It's a bit of normality because, like, I'm only speaking for myself, but I know obviously speaking to other ladies, like, it is a journey. Like, you can have some good days where you sort of don't think about it and then it'll pop into your head and you'll be like, oh yeah, I've been through that. Yeah. Like for me and the other ladies I was speaking to, like that year afterwards can be the worst from a mental health side of point of view because you're really processing stuff. But like it's the little things that can make a difference. Like usually we're talking about the counselling, like the Northwest Cancer Care, like I did counselling with them. They were absolutely amazing, helped me, grounded me. And then obviously thinking, actually, I do need support, like structurally there, knowing that I could go into Michael Hinney's, because the amount of women that I have come into contact with over the last year and did not know. I was like, the lady, that reason why I went, she had a mastectomy.
Do you know what? Can I hold you for a second? I have to take a break for the news, right? But there's just a couple more questions. Can you stay for 5 minutes after the 11 o'clock news? Is that okay?
Yes, I can.
Because there are just a couple of questions I think might be critical to this whole conversation. So Danielle and Martina is going to stay with us. I'm going to take a break, then the news, and then we'll finish up our chat with the ladies.